And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And right now we're going to get right on into our commentary entitled, If a Tree Falls in the Forest, the Powerful Small Forest Stewardship Council, or FSC, wants to have its say. This is written by Jim Carlton, a staff reporter on the Wall Street Journal, and was published on September 26th. Here we go. This is kind of a long one. I'm going to make sure I've got the vocal cords properly lubed up here. All right. On St. Patrick's Day last year, strange announcements began blaring down from the intercoms of a dozen Home Depot stores around the U.S. Attention, shoppers! On aisle 7, you'll find mahogany ripped from the heart of the Amazon, declared one. Flummoxed store managers raced through the aisles trying to apprehend the environmental activists behind the stunt who had gained access codes for the intercoms. After months of such antics, Home Depot last year bowed to their demands to stop selling wood chopped from endangered forest and instead to stock wood products certified by something called the Forest Stewardship Council, or FSC. If you aren't familiar with the Forest Stewardship Council yet, chances are you soon will be. Based in a weathered Mexican mansion with just 15 full-time employees, the 7-year-old organization has nonetheless amassed extraordinary power within the world's timber industries. With its flair for Hollywood-style self-promotion and world-class diplomatic skills, the Forest Stewardship Council has managed to get radical environmentalists and leaders of some of America's most straight-laced corporations to agree on a common agenda. And what an agenda it is. The FSC hopes someday to make it impossible for loggers to sell wood products in the U.S. and abroad if they don't bear the organization's seal of approval. That means trees can't be harvested in any way that threatens the health of forests or of endangered plants or animals within those forests. The logging companies mustn't pollute rivers, employ too much herbicides, or leave hillsides exposed to erosion, and they must tread carefully on the rights of workers, especially indigenous peoples. And the Forest Stewardship Council has already made surprising progress. Other big wood products chains have followed Home Depot's lead. Wick Incorporated's big lumber unit embraced FSC standards last November, followed by Lowe's, the number 2 home improvement retailer, last month, and window-making giant Anderson Corporation just this month. All told, retailers that together sell well over 1/5 of all wood used in America's home remodeling market have signed on, while the acceptance level in Europe is even higher. Industry executives say the movement is quickly reaching critical mass and could soon make it a liability for wood products producers not to have the FSC symbol. There is no question that the FSC has absolutely changed the fabric of the industry, says Catherine Mater, a forest products consultant in Corvallis, Oregon. But not everyone thinks the change is for the better. Most of the large timber companies in the U.S. worried the FSC is too extreme have banded together to create a rival certification group, kicking off a public relations war. The Forest Stewardship Council has responded with advertisements in People and Playboy magazines featuring actor Pierce Brosnan and singer Olivia Newton-John as spokespeople. Some environmental groups, meanwhile, complain that FSC is soft on loggers. At the center of this storm is an Oxford-trained forester named Timothy Sinnott, who serves as FSC's executive director. Hardly a rabble-rouser, the 57-year-old Mr. Sinnott is a soft-spoken Briton who spends most of his time shuttling around the globe acting as a diplomat for the FSC's controversial policies. He is quick to dissociate himself from last year's sneak attacks at Home Depot, although he doesn't criticize them either, noting that the intercom hijackers were from a group called the Rainforest Action Network. It's easy to understand his ambivalence. So widespread is FSC's reach that both San Francisco-based Rainforest Action and Home Depot belong to the organization. Our members operate in the ways they think best, said Mr. Sinnott. That's part of the appeal. When he helped create the group in 1993, he and his colleagues aimed for maximum inclusiveness. That means eco-activists such as Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth rub elbows with the likes of home furnishings retailer Inter-IKEA, Systems BV, and Swedish paper giant Assodomain AG, whose staff ecologist is FSC's current president. The eclectic mix of 300 members doesn't hurt when it comes to fundraising. Both the European Commission and the World Wildlife Fund, as well as a number of private foundations, contribute to FSC's $2 million annual budget. Based in Oaxaca, Mexico, because the southern Mexican city's location between the forests of the northern and southern hemisphere, the FSC operates on a shoestring. Its 9 investigators travel extensively, auditing the work of 9 independent forestry consulting firms around the globe that do the certification reviews. It's harrowing work. While inspecting forests, Mr. Sennett has been charged by gorillas and elephants in Africa and flanked by machine gun-toting bodyguards in a rebel-infested part of the Philippines. He has also lost colleagues in the line of duty early last year. A team of 3 FSC certifiers died in a traffic accident while doing forest work in Cameroon, Africa. There are many hazards in working in the forest, especially in the tropics where roads, weather, and the quality of driving are all in question, says Mr. Sennett. Working in the boardrooms of corporate America holds its own hazards. An early program FSC faced was one of credibility. Plenty of companies were happy to mouth support for FSC's ideals, but few were actually willing to take the next step and adjust their procurement policies. This left FSC staffers with few cards to play in trying to persuade logging companies to undergo the rigors and expense of obtaining certification. Home Depot, the nation's largest home improvement chain, was the most important nut to crack. The Atlanta-based retailer initially balked at implementing FSC guidelines. The lag, say Home Depot executive, was caused by the company's methodical efforts to wean its suppliers and customers from endangered wood species and other environmentally unsound products. Activists, meanwhile, wanted action in days, not years. They gave us lip service of all sorts, says Randy Hayes, Rainforest Action's president. After weighing a boycott call against Home Depot, Rainforest Action opted instead for a protest campaign of theatrical hijinks. The reason? So few retailers carried certified wood products that a boycott without consumer alternatives would surely fail, strategists reasoned. So Rainforest Action enlisted celebrities to speak out, bought newspaper ads, and dispatched activists in white lab coats to Home Depot stores across America to educate shoppers guerrilla style on the evils of tainted wood, says Mr. Hayes. It was like good cop, bad cop, but we were FSC's bad cop. Home Depot, feeling unfairly targeted, bristled. Our goals are not far apart, wrote Suzanne Apple, Home Depot's vice president of environmental concerns, in a 1998 letter to the Rainforest Action organizers. Quote, unfortunately, our resources have been depleted by the calls and letters that your action has generated. The campaign culminated in Home Depot's annual shareholders meeting last year in Atlanta. With the company's directors and major shareholders in town, the activists made big headlines with a self-described ethical shoplifting spree at Home Depot's flagship store downtown. As the paparazzi and store managers watched, activists accompanied by Chief Quantsinis of British Columbia's Noxalk Indian tribe filled a cart of Canadian cedar from Home Depot's shelves and tried to wheel it outside without paying. Thwarted by store security officials, they then delivered some purchased timber to Atlanta offices of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, where the chief, sniffing the boards in full headdress, proclaimed them stolen from tribal lands. An annoyed special agent promised to investigate, but the activist never heard back from him. In late August last year, Home Depot cried uncle. It announced it would phase out sales of the most endangered species of wood and give preference to FSC-certified products whenever they were available. Home Depot's officials insist the protest didn't affect their change of heart. It was very much a business decision to say, look, we sell a lot of wood and we want to make sure we will have wood for a long time to come, says Ms. Apple, the company's environmental specialist. Home Depot is working with FSC products into its 1,050 stores gradually, citing limited supplies of the certified wood. For example, the retailer says stores in selected markets such as Seattle are already selling several FSC-certified products such as lumber and grill handles, while at least one brand of FSC plywood is being distributed nationally. The company says it hasn't set any time or numerical goals on its FSC program, but pledges to back the campaign with advertising both in stores and in the media. For Leo Stroyloff, a retired engineer perusing a timber aisle in Colma, California, Home Depot, the idea sounds good. Even if it would cost me more money, I would choose FSC-certified wood because everybody has to do their own small job in protecting the environment, he said. Home Depot's embrace of FSC standards has started to ripple far and wide. One telling example? The Montiel Band Door Factory outside of Oaxaca, a half-mile-long behemoth that churns out more doors than any other plant in Mexico. Montiel Band sells to distributors around the world, including some Home Depot suppliers. Because he gets a better price for the doors that go to Home Depot, factory owner Elroy Borgio Abascal decided last year to expand the relationship by getting FSC certification. But he was told he would first have to lean on his suppliers to shape up. This meant paying an extra 15% to lure regional sawmills into the program. One such sawmill belongs to a tribe of Zapoteca Indians in the nearby Sierra Norte Mountains, home of much of the oak and pine used by Montiel Bond. Although an FSC inspector found Zapotecas were managing their 50,000-acre forest well, their sawmill reeked of toxic chemicals. What's more, the carpenter shop workers weren't wearing any protective gear and sawdust wafted into the air without any ventilation. The inspector gave them a year to upgrade safety standards and no FSC certificate yet. Count on Montalban's Mr. Borgia to keep the pressure on. If we want to continue our business, we need certification, he says. Such chain reactions have let the FSC expand the area under their approval to more than 45 million acres, about the size of New England, from 2 million acres 5 years ago. The FSC designation can now be found from the vast temperate forests of Scandinavia to the jungles of equatorial countries such as Bolivia and Indonesia. The progress isn't good enough for everyone, and the FSC spends a lot of time towing the line between radical environmentalists who don't want any logging and the timber industry, which bridles at restrictions that hurt profits. In the African country of Gabon, for instance, environmentalists howled after an FSC certificate was issued for a tropical rainforest owned by the French logging company Leroy Gabon. The company, a unit of Germany's Glutz AG, wanted to log in a virgin forest that housed endangered lowland gorillas. Friends of the Earth of Britain and Germany's Save the Rainforest branded the certification betrayal. The FSC investigated and concluded a contractor had issued the certificate prematurely, although it pointed out that the company was planning to implement a habitat protection program. Nor does the industry always cooperate. Earlier this year, the big Canadian forestry firm J.D. Irving Limited renounced its FSC certification in Canada's Maritime Provinces after FSC officials endorsed standards in the region that the company considered too stringent, including a plan to curtail certain chemicals in forest management. Mr. Sennett says only a dozen or so of the group's 200 forest certifications have ever been canceled for whatever reason. In the U.S., most of the largest timber companies have created the rival Sustainable Forestry Initiative, or SFI, which covers about 60 million acres of North American timberland. The problem with the FSC is that their standards are determined by environmentalists sitting in an office somewhere, said W. Henderson Moore, chief executive officer of the American Forest and Paper Association, a trade group for the U.S. timber industry. But FSC supporters say SFI and similar industrial groups lack credibility because they're largely self-policed and have less stringent standards. For example, FSC standards curtail the use of herbicides while SFIs do not. It's the fox watching the hen house, says Kate Heaton, senior forestry specialist with the Natural Resources Defense Council, an environmental group based in New York that is an FSC member. Although SFI has 10 times more U.S. acreage under certification than the Forestry Standards Council, the disparity is misleading, environmentalists say, because adherence to SFI standard is mandatory for members of the American Forest and Paper Association. For their part, SFI supporters argue their standards are just as rigorous as the FSC's. So far, the big retailers have tilted toward FSC. Executives of Home Depot and Lowe's companies say they prefer FSC certification to SFI's because of FSC's independence, and FSC has global reach, whereas SFI covers mainly American forests. The FSC, meanwhile, puts its outside certifiers on the hot seat, too. In California's High Sierra, for example, three burly woodsmen in jeans and work boots fidgeted anxiously recently as a pair of FSC auditors inspected logging practices in a forest 100 miles northeast of Sacramento. Scientific Certification Systems Incorporated, an Oakland firm, had already determined that Applied Forest Management is running the 22,000-acre forest in an environmentally sound way, but the two FSC auditors who wended their way over hill and hollow scanning stumps and stream beds for environmental taboos such as herbicides and soil erosion weren't convinced. Rounding a bend into a grove of towering Douglas fir trees, FSC Inspector Christian Vallejos admired a cutting technique that has culled smaller, more densely clustered trees to benefit taller, sturdier ones. A few miles on, however, he frowned at a 5-acre patch where loggers had recently cleared a swath of hillside hit by wildfire, a practice FSC discourages in most cases because it can add to erosion. An Applied Forest Management executive explained that the fire was so intense that it left only charred tree debris, which had to be removed for planting and future fire control purposes. Robert Hrubes, Senior Vice President of Scientific Certifications, leapt to his defense. "We don't certify perfect forests," he said. "We certify exemplary forests." Our commentary this week, if a tree falls in the forest, the small, powerful Forest Stewardship Council wants to have its say. Written by Jim Carlton, staff reporter of the Wall Street Journal, published September 26th, and we thank him for his commentary. And Earth First Radio is going to move right on into some more announcements here. There's an important bill in Congress called the National Forest Protection and Restoration Act, H.R. 1396, designed to protect all national forests from the scourge of commercial logging. The Sierra Club, the John Muir Project, and grassroots groups from around the country set a goal of garnering 100 congressional co-sponsors for H.R. 1396. They have reached 99 co-sponsors, but Congress will be wrapping up any day now. Maybe, maybe not. The National Sierra Club Committee believes that Representative Sam Farr is targeted as one of the best prospects to become the 100th co-sponsor. After all, he has such an environmentally-minded constituency around the Monterey Bay, California, he needs to hear from his constituents. Requests are being made to call Representative Farr and ask him to become the 100th co-sponsor for the National Forest Protection and Restoration Act, and suggested that you call his office at 202-225-2861. That's 202-225-2861, even if you don't live near Monterey Bay in California. National Forest Protection and Restoration Act will completely end all commercial logging in all national forests and could redirect part of a $1 billion federal timber subsidy into non-commercial, science-based ecological restoration programs for all of our public lands. This program would provide jobs in the woods that repair the damage caused by a century of logging while reducing the risk of catastrophic fires. The bill also provides support for rural communities and schools. It funds support for the development of tree-free alternative materials to reduce the overall wood consumption around the world. And finally, it provides $500 million in taxpayer savings in the first year alone. Want more information? Go to the web. Type in www.johnmuirproject.org, and you'll learn something there. That's www.johnmuirproject.org, or you can give them a call, 831-476-1906. That's the John Muir Project, 831-476-1906. And environmentalists are pushing hard to convince the Clinton administration to expand its proposed plan to prohibit road building on millions of acres of national forest land. The first version of this plan, unveiled last May, would ban roads on 43 million acres of roadless lands, primarily in western states. The next version, which will take into account more than 1 million comments from the public, is due out in mid-November and is expected to be finalized in mid-December. Earth First Radio is calling for a new version to ban not just road building but also logging, and to include the 8.5-million-acre Tongass National Forest in Alaska. U.S. Forest Service Chief Mike Dombeck says there is high public support for protecting forest land. Society no longer views these forests as warehouses of commodities to market, Dombeck says. Still, Republicans are suggesting that a new president could overturn the road ban next year. Make a phone call or send a fax to President Clinton asking him to include the Alaska Tongass Rainforest and all roadless areas and protect all roadless areas from logging. Do that today. And let's move down into Central America. Dear friends, in this letter we want to bring you up to date concerning the threats to the Maya Biosphere Reserve from oil development. During the months of April, May, and June of this year, we received hundreds of letters and emails demanding that Guatemalan authorities respect one of the last remaining tropical forests on our planet. We are very happy to inform you that the pressure was successful. Under the leadership of Tropico Verde and with your invaluable support, the international campaign was a complete victory. The government of Guatemala retracted its plan to open the Maya Biosphere Reserve to oil development, and the government recognized the severe social and environmental impacts that oil development could provoke and made a decision without precedent in our country. Oil development will not proceed as long as the people of Guatemala oppose it. The decision is very important for us, although we realize that there's a long road ahead and we must keep our attention on this issue so that the decision is never reversed. But know that together you and we have accomplished a huge achievement. We send you our most sincere appreciation for your support and your solidarity with our cause. Your letters are very important in winning this victory, and we want you to know that we will always remember your gesture of solidarity. We would have liked to respond to each one of you, but this is impossible for us because of the large amount of letters and other demands on our time. To all who wrote personal messages as well as letters to the government, we assure you that we read your comments with much attention. Excuse us for not responding individually. Wishing you all the best. Piedad Espinosa, President, Tropico Verde, 14 Calle 508, Zona 10, 01010, Guatemala, Guatemala. That's really a nice letter to all you environmentalists that did help out with that campaign, featured here on Earth First Radio, as well as many other forums. Help stop a threat to the Mojave Preserve in California. A proposed new water transfer and storage facility project in the Mojave Desert has the potential to critically threaten the plants and wildlife of the Mojave National Preserve and nearby federal wilderness areas. The Cadiz project could pollute as well as severely drain an ancient aquifer, drying up pure freshwater springs vital to the survival of desert wildlife. It could also turn two nearby dry lakes into air-polluting dust bowls. A new environmental analysis is being rushed through without adequate time for environmental groups and the public to respond. Here's the background. The Mojave National Preserve and at least four federally protected wilderness areas are threatened by a proposal to drain up to 652 billion, with a B, gallons from an aquifer that has sustained the fragile ecosystems of the western Mojave Desert for millennia. In addition to draining the aquifer of native groundwater, the proposed project would call for pumping polluted Colorado River aqueduct water into the same groundwater basin, thereby polluting the aquifer's pure fossil-age water. The Cadiz Water Project could be devastating to rare desert wildlife and plants in the Mojave National Preserve and federal wilderness areas by substantially lowering the groundwater table. The project would cause numerous natural springs and seeps to dry up, endangering the Mojave Desert's second-largest herd of bighorn sheep, and threaten desert tortoises and other wildlife that depend on these scarce water sources to survive. The project also has the potential to cause major air quality problems. Two dry lakes, the Cadiz and Bristol dry lakes, are close to the project and surrounded by the preserve and wilderness areas. The water table currently lies just below the surface sediments of the lakes. If the water table drops even a foot or two, massive amounts of dust could be blown into the atmosphere, six times the amount of dust produced by the well-known environmental disaster at Owens Lake. Clearly, the Cadiz Water Project must be subjected to meaningful public scrutiny and criticism. Unfortunately, the Bureau of Land Management and the Municipal Water District are not giving the public and environmental groups enough time to study the report to provide adequate comments. The agencies are trying to rush the report past the public in only 45 days instead of the minimum 90 days required by the law. In order to ensure the National Park Conservation Association and other groups and the public have an adequate opportunity to review and comment on the Cadiz Water Project and the new draft environmental impact statement, we must persuade the agencies to extend the comment period to at least 90 days. To do so, we need your help. Please send a letter or email to the Department of Interior, which oversees the Bureau of Land Management, requesting such an extension as soon as possible. Here's the address. Please send your letter to the Honorable David Hayes, Deputy Secretary of the Department of the Interior, 1849 C Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20240. Once again, the Honorable David Hayes, Deputy Secretary of the Department of the Interior, 1849 C Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20240. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for news. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruzief@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061, and be sure to send any and all announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their current address is P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer. Just go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC every Thursday night at 8 p.m., you can download the player for free and listen in. or you can go find archive radio shows anytime on the web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. And you can get a free MP3 player at that website also. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Portions of this newscast were prepared with the help of Stefan and Eon. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to Walkin' Jim Stoltz off of his CD called The Vision. This one's called The Food Chain Song.
Butterfly, she's so neat with her fancy wings and her dainty feet. Oh, she flutters here and there just like a queen. And if you saw her there, you know what I mean. No one can replace her, no, no, none. She's the most special creature flying under the sun. But then you think about the food chain, and along comes a hungry crow. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 she's gone. Oh, the little fawn, she is so cute, with her bambi eyes and her spotted suit. Oh, she prances through the meadow without a care, chasing butterflies all through the air. No one can replace her, no, no, none. She's the most special creature prancing under the sun. But then you think about the food chain, and along comes a hungry cow. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 she's gone. Man, you can tell by his tan, he's carrying everything that his back can stand. He's a walking page out of L.L. Bean. If you saw him in the woods, you know what I mean. No one can replace him, no, 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 no. He's a most special man cause he carries a gun. But then you think about the food chain, and along comes a hungry grizz. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 he's gone. Fat or skinny, short or tall, you don't have to worry at all. You don't have to be dressed in style to get a taste or be tasted by the wild. Just think about the food chain, and along comes something bigger. Chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 you're gone. I said a chomp, 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 gobble, 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 gulp, 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 you're gone.